I'm Brian Russo, and welcome back to Coastal Connection. Coming up in just a bit, we'll head to the one event where voters will have an opportunity to talk one-on-one with the newcomers running in Ocean City's upcoming election. But before we talk about new candidates, let's talk about really old maps. The largest and rarest collection of maps ever to come to the Eastern Shore is being exhibited at Carr Place, the 1799 federal mansion in Onancock, Virginia. We're talking maps that date back to the 1600s, and some are valued at more than $500,000. They are hand-drawn maps, and in some cases, they're completely breathtaking. They came to Onancock courtesy of Graham Arader, who we'll speak with in just a few minutes. He's the owner of the Arader Galleries in New York City, and he's widely considered to be one of the top art dealers in the world. His specialty is old maps. He provided more than 100 maps of our region from his collection to be on display for the next few weeks at Carr Place. On this day, there were dozens of people who had brought their own maps and antiques to see what Arader would value them at.
This is really, now this is the whole picture.
So while that was going on, I took a stroll around the mansion with Jenny Barker. She's the executive director of the Eastern Shore Virginia Historical Society. She gave me a little history lesson about why Carr Place is such an important gem on Virginia's Eastern Shore.
Well, this is the headquarters for the Eastern Shore of Virginia Historical Society. So we house our collections here, priceless artwork, archives, and it's actually the home for several different educational programs and concerts. But this house is special because it has been so pristinely restored, like you mentioned before. All of the rooms are in their exact, or replicated exactly how they were actually created back in the 18th century. But this house is very unique because most Eastern Shore style homes, as many of, like you know, are wood frame buildings. Mm-hmm. Very rarely did the Federalists here on the Eastern Shore build with brick. In fact, it was very expensive. We don't have red clay here, so they would have had to barge it over, burn the bricks themselves here, obviously on the property. And so that was a huge expense. So Carr Place represents, you know, the 1% mm-hmm. of the 18th century. But the family who built this home were really progressive. They were these bright young things. They didn't believe in slavery. They had this massive plantation. So they actually offered the community a lot through their own example. They were forward thinkers far beyond their time. And that's why this is such a happy place to come to work for me every day.
Absolutely. It's really interesting, too, because, you know, some places in some historical societies, They focus on one thing, and as you mentioned, there's a bunch of different, you know, missions of your organization and this place. Specifically, right now, something very special is going on here in Onancock at Carr Place. Tell me a little bit about what's happening.
We have welcomed the largest antique map and Autobahn dealer in the world for an exhibit that's going to last until November 14th. Graham Arader from Graham Arader Galleries in New York City has come down and loaned us over 80 pieces that are mounted and displayed throughout the house. We're talking about Renaissance maps from 1590 to the Jefferson Fry map to Lord Fairfax's map. These are incredible masterpieces, hand-drawn, one-of-a-kind. We also have these incredible gouache on paper paintings by George Beck, which was George Washington's favorite artist. And these are images of Georgetown, obviously before mm-hmm. Georgetown looks like it does today. He's also given us these beautiful watercolors by Redouté. Mm-hmm. Pierre-Joseph Redouté was the botanist for Marie Antoinette and later Empress Josephine. Mm-hmm. So these are here in the house, as well as the beautiful Audubons, the double elephant folios that, you know, we actually have one that belonged to Ronald Reagan at one point. So, you know, Mr. Arader has been very generous. He's been giving talks all weekend and appraisal services, and now he's allowing us to keep these things, these precious historical documents, because that's really what they are. They're not just art pieces of artwork, but they tell a story and they have significant value for their information.
And it's such a unique opportunity to come down and be able to look at these things, you know, in person. They're just as striking as seeing some of these amazing old portraits or some of the architecture or some of the idiosyncratic qualities of the woodwork in a place like this. Let's walk over here for a second. The other thing that really was remarkable to me is just not only the intricacies of each map, but the price tag and, yeah. And the date. I mean, obviously, these are extremely rare. They date back, this one in particular, back in, into the 1590s. This one's $48,000. This is like an 8x10.
It was a document that was used. It was hand-drawn, and then all of the other maps of Virginia derived from this first map. Mm-hmm. It is the earliest map. It's the John White map of Virginia.
And there are other pieces of art in the mansion that have nothing to do with this exhibit per se, but they're just as notable and just as impressive.
So on a regular basis, you can come to Carr Place in Anancock and see original portraits painted by Charles Wilson Peale. We also have a portrait of George Washington, an original portrait of George Washington that was painted by Gilbert Stuart. And this is the exact same portrait that you will see in the White House. Gilbert Stuart actually painted several of these portraits. In fact, they call them $100 bills, because if you were rich enough to be able to afford these, you would pay $100. He commissioned Gilbert Stuart to paint this. He would start it, his daughter would finish it, and people with wealth could actually have a picture of the first president. Yeah. So then you'll also be able to see rotating exhibits on a regular basis. And like I said, we have programs once a month for during the day for our adult community. I have an education director, and we host several children's activities throughout the year, including online lesson plans. You can go to www.shorehistory.org and actually pull up lesson plans for any of our centuries in America.
After the appraisals wrapped up, I was joined by Graham Arader. I started by asking him what makes an old map special and valuable.
Maps that show new information for the first time in a significant way are the most desirable maps. They're the ones that go for the most money. There are five key maps in Virginia history that are the mother maps, the chief prototype maps, the chief type maps of the Chesapeake Bay and Virginia that really are the ones the collectors want. Here's the John White, done in 1590. The price on that is $48,000. Then comes next is Captain John Smith map that's published in 1612 in London. Price on that is $130,000. Then the next map after that is the Augustine Herman map. We do not have that map, but we have maps that copy that Augustine Herman map of 1673. The map after that is the Tryon Jefferson map, mm-hmm. done by Thomas Jefferson's father, published in 1751. We have the one that was used by the French to determine naval positioning for the naval strategy for the capturing Cornwallis at Yorktown. So that's $750,000, but we have a regular Fryon Jefferson map, just like the one that hangs in Independence Hall, that's $35,000. Yeah. Then lastly, we have Thomas Hutchins' map that shows expansion to the west, Western Virginia. So those are the five key maps in American history that show vast new information for the very first time. Maps that copy that have some improvements would be the second level down. Right. And they would be a third or a fourth or a fifth the price. Maps that copy the copies go for less. So if you have something that's the first map to show the key information, that's what the collectors want.
So it's date and rarity, so to speak. And tell me a little bit about how, because obviously when you hear handcrafted maps, obviously, you know, this wasn't going through a drafting table. Tell me the length of time and just sort of the art behind creating a map in
fabulous,
this time period.
Brilliant question. So the map maker is the person that went out into the field, like Captain John Smith, and paddled around the Chesapeake Bay for a year. He then goes back to London, transfers the information onto a copper plate with the help of engravers. That takes about 6 months. Then the book has to get published, and then it gets distributed. So from the time it's an idea in someone's head to the time it finally gets published can be as long as 3 years.
Right.
So it takes a long time.
And of course, with these early maps, you know, they didn't really know, some of these places were sort of uncharted territory. They didn't really know where they were going. And compiling that information seems to be a Herculean effort. What can these maps tell us about that time period? And what can we learn now looking back at these maps?
You can see certainly the progression of knowledge about the Chesapeake Bay. So with White, it's practically nothing. With Smith, it's a vast improvement over 21 years. With Fry and Jefferson, it's a tremendous improvement upwards. So it really, every year, every new map that comes out is a little bit better. Yeah. But these five maps are the big jumps in information. So it tells you about today, we've got, you know, GPS. Right. You know, you can know where you are within a foot of where you are in the world.
Right. Earlier, I saw you, people were bringing in things of theirs, that, you know, valuables and antiques, and you were appraising them. When you look at those things everywhere that you go in the world, what are the things that you're looking for that define authenticity or value?
So I'm looking for the oxidation of the iron in the ink, ferrous oxide. I'm looking for the oxidation of the copper in the green, cuprous oxide. I'm looking for aging to the paper, the cellulose fiber. I'm looking for a little bit of discoloration around the edges. As the pieces age, they discolor and get a little dark around the edges. I'm looking for a fold down the center from where it was in an atlas. I'm looking for all the signs of aging that exist on a map. I'm looking for a few stains, a little bit of discoloration, maybe a small tear, anything that really speaks to the fact that this was something that really existed for as long as 400 years.
Obviously, with anybody who in your line of work, age and history and the length of time from which something was created would make many people assume that this region, just the fact that it goes so far back into American history, would be possibly one of the most valuable places for things like maps or things like historical artifacts. How appealing is this region to someone like you and your business?
Outstanding question. Really amazing. I'm impressed. Virginia, of course, is the oldest colony. It goes back to John White, who's here in 1584. And the tobacco industry, the farming that's done here, the cotton, the wheat, but mostly the tobacco that's produced from here gets the attention of all of Europe. They want this tobacco. So these maps are showing greatly improved information based on these farmers selling their goods in London and getting paid whatever the merchants want to pay them. So this is the story of trade between the Chesapeake Bay planters and the English, which is primarily goes on for 300 years. So it tells that story brilliantly.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about what it's like for you, you know, being a New York City guy, being down here on Virginia's Eastern Shore in a place like this that has so much history. It's literally, you know, kind of a living museum.
This is the finest restoration of any home I've ever seen in Virginia. This gets an A+. It's brilliant work. The colors they picked are brilliant. The way they're taking care of the buildings, the grounds, the furniture that they're using is all at the very highest level. Jenny Barker is doing a fantastic job keeping everything in tip-top condition, very secure, very impressive. It is an A+ renovation.
Yeah. Last question, and I thank you so much for talking to me. You know, I know it's hard to maybe point out one map that is the one, but I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, is there any map in this collection that just, you know, takes your breath away, so to speak?
Well, certainly Lord Thomas Fairfax's original manuscripts of the Potomac River used to delineate his northern boundary of his 5,200,000 acre inheritance called the Northern Neck is a national treasure that should end up in a major collection at the Library of Congress or the University of Virginia or some institution, Colonial Williamsburg or Mount Vernon. These should not be in private hands. This should go to a major research institution. They are great national icons of the development of Virginia and America.
That was Graham Arader, a renowned art dealer from New York City, talking with me about a rare map collection that's on display at Carr Place in Oneonkoc, Virginia, through November 14th. We also heard from the Eastern Shore of Virginia Historical Society's Executive Director, Jenny Barker. If you want to learn more about this remarkable collection, click to our website, wamucoast.org. We finished today's show in Ocean City, at a meet and greet for candidates running for Ocean City Council. Usually an event like this is a lot of grandstanding and handshaking, but this one was interesting because it was the public's only chance to get to know a pool of candidates that are pretty much unknown in the small resort town. The evening was sponsored by the Citizens for Ocean City Group, which came to be before the last election after the council majority at that time made the controversial decision to fire then-city manager Dennis Dare. The grassroots group backed Dare's run for city council, as well as a few other candidates, and on election night, the council majority swung once again. So I went to the meet and greet the other night. I wanted to find out what voters were asking these new candidates. And I wanted to get a sense of the role this citizens group is taking now in Ocean City. I started with this guy.
Hi, I'm Jason Damore. What were you looking for when you came here and what have you found?
Well, that's just it. There's a lot of new candidates out there. I wanted to get to know them a little bit, see what each one had to bring to the table and which ones offered what, and just kind of get a feel for, you know, who's running this year and what they can do for the community.
Yeah.
What were some of the big takeaways in meeting some of these new candidates today? What were the questions that you had for them?
Well, some are very young and some are very new to it. So I wanted to know basically what kind of experience they had. And I think a lot of these candidates are very eager and very interested and not many actually batted an eye when I asked some hard questions. So it was kind of nice to, you know, be able to get face to face with them and get the chance to actually see them as opposed to just see a sign somewhere in a yard.
What are the most important things to you as far as issues facing Ocean City, and who were the candidates that answered those concerns the best in your opinion?
Well, the mayor has been doing this a long time, and he seems to have a really good understanding of what Ocean City needs to go to the future and things like that. But I wanted to see. I wanted to really give everybody an open shot and give everybody a chance, and I'm glad I came.
Joe Groves is the spokesperson for the Citizens for Ocean City. He says the group has become more about voter awareness and education, and this night highlights that effort in the community.
There's no other form in Ocean City where people can come stand before the people running, the candidates, and ask them questions and get to know them. And it's really a great opportunity. And I think, you know, what we stand for now is to educate the voters so they can make smart and wise choices, because it's important to all of us that we have the right council there.
Tell me, as a voter, what you're looking for from these new people and who have caught your eye.
Well, I think that I'm personally looking for someone who understands fiscal responsibility, that wants to work with other council members, and when there is a difference, that wants to come to a consensus so we can still get the right vote or the right code or whatever we need or ordinance that's best for Ocean City.
Joe Groves says the Citizens for Ocean City group is all about voter awareness and education, and that was absolutely evident in both the turnout and the interaction between the candidates and voters the other night. But you can't really stop there when talking about the role of this group in the resort. It seems they aren't purely academic. Just look at the recent public hearings of two potential council candidates concerning residency in the resort. Both of those hearings were brought forward by a local lawyer representing the Citizens for Ocean City group. And shortly after the event the other night, the group officially endorsed four candidates for council seats. Now you can take all of that for what it's worth. But the bottom line is this group, which essentially came out of nowhere a couple years ago, is seemingly here to stay in Ocean City. And at the very least, they are absolutely energizing a growing portion of the voting base in Ocean City. I'm Brian Russo.